Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the fourth week of March. And we would like to start the program by wishing you all a very happy spring. And we are especially happy to be recording out in the field today. And it is a beautiful day. I mean, we couldn't be luckier. We were like, oh, is it going to rain? Is the wind going to blow? And it's just this gorgeous spring day. So we are all very thankful to be out here and to be talking about the important subject of wetlands. We've invited our friend Donna Frostholm to help us navigate this often complex subject. Donna's a wetland biologist with nearly 40 years of experience and is certified as a professional wetland biologist. She's worked in wetland research and consulting, as well as a staff biologist in local government. We're also blessed with additional help from our friend and field recorder, Meg Amos. Meg has also been a certified wetland biologist for many years, and I hope that she will interrupt us often with insights of her own. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Deborah.
Yeah.
It's good to be here in the sunshine.
Oh, gosh,
yes.
We are so lucky.
This is wonderful.
Yeah, it is. But before we begin our conversation, let's first hear the mystery sound of the week. Yes, I know that this is a hard one, but a big hint is to think spring. We'll play it again at the end of the program and tell you more about it. I have long wished to do a Nature Now show focused on wetland habitats, especially about how wetlands are identified and delineated, because they are so complex and misunderstood, and their values have been so long underappreciated. I had always expected to do such a show with my dear friend and wetland specialist Dixie Llewellyn by my side, and had indeed been planning to contact her about my idea last November, the very week that I learned that she had suddenly died. This has hit us all in the Port Townsend and native plant-loving community very hard. Dixie was a wonderfully warm and talented individual. Her specialty were wetlands, but she was a great advocate for all native plants, especially those in prairie communities. She was instrumental in protecting our beautiful remnant prairie here in Port Townsend, the Kaitai Prairie, now part of the Camas Prairie Park. She was not only a central figure in the Olympic chapter of the Washington Native Plant Society, but also a fine botanical illustrator and musician, and, best of all, a wonderful human being. Her vibrant spirit and zany wit is sorely missed by many of us, near and far, and the best that we can do is to carry on to honor some of the things that she held dear, like these wetland areas. Donna was also a good friend of Dixie's, and Meg had been starting to do some work with her also, so I'm very grateful that they were willing to help me honor her memory by recording this show.
So glad to be here.
Yeah, I know, I was getting a little bit weepy. Mm-hmm. Her memorial's tomorrow, so it's perfect timing that we get to be out on a beautiful day.
This is the best way to remember her.
Yeah, it is. As well as honoring a very special person and habitat type with this show, we also wish to acknowledge our gratitude for having access to a special place, the Winona Wetland. We are very grateful to our local land trust, and specifically to Kathleen Mitchell, whose idea for a wildlife corridor in our area was first hatched back in the 1990s, for having the vision to protect this area as part of a chain of important habitat types, stretching across the tip of the Quimper Peninsula from Fort Worden to McCurdy Point. This area is now known as the Quimper Wildlife Corridor and has gradually grown to a 3.5-mile band of green, encompassing over 240 acres, and connects a string of wetlands, forests, and floodplains that provide habitat for more than 200 bird species, amphibians, and mammals. Winona Wetland is one of six wetlands linked in this ribbon of green and is found in about the middle of the corridor. It's one of the largest in the protected area and part of the block known as Cappy's Trails and Woods. So, Donna, we should probably start at the very beginning and ask you to define what a wetland is for us. And we should probably start with the very most basic of definitions, though the terms can soon become very complex. All wetlands have three basic characteristics, right?
Yes, they do. And so wetlands are those areas within the landscape where water is temporarily detained. And water is the driving force of wetlands. And the depth of water and the duration that it's there present also influences other parts of the wetland, the soils and the vegetation. And so water in the wetland, it has to be at or near the soil surface to be a wetland. And below the soil surface, if the water is not above the soil surface, it can be near the soil surface just below, kind of close to where we are now, which is dominated by herbaceous vegetation. And what's unique about the soils in wetlands is that the water is detained there for sufficient periods of time for biological activity, meaning microbes, to chemically reduce the environment there, meaning it becomes anaerobic. So that's a distinction for wetland soils, also known as hydric soils, from, say, the adjacent terrestrial habitats, is that they will become anaerobic because of microbial activity in just below the soil surface. Now, the depth and duration of the water also influences what plants are going to be there. If, for example, the wetland is not inundated, it's near the soil surface, it'll have one kind of plants that maybe have a wider tolerance for being in wetter habitats, or if the area is inundated, then it will have a different kind of plant community, for example, cattails. So the interaction of the water, the soils, and the vegetation all form what we see in the wetlands at any given time. I think the thing to remember is that wetlands are wet usually in this area at this time of year. So this is a really good time for us to be out in the wetlands. So they will dry up as the spring goes on, and at some point it might not even look like a wetland to some people because the water has either evaporated or infiltrated down through the soil surface or been taken up by the plants. The area here, like for example this wetland, as with many wetlands, they are between terrestrial environments and deep water habitats. And so the physical, chemical, and biological things that are happening within a wetland also to a certain extent are influenced by what's in the adjacent areas.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and I guess we should get clear on what is not a wetland, right? If you ask most people to define what a wetland was, they'd say that a lake is a wetland, but the lake itself is just the water, really. Right. It's the wet land that you're interested in, the area that abuts the water.
Right. So, as I just mentioned, wetlands have vegetation. So aquatic resources like lakes or potentially some ponds, they do not have vegetation. So they cannot be wetlands. The water is too deep for vegetation to get established and grow. So they are a separate habitat type. But ponds and lakes, they can have a wetland around the periphery. That happens quite frequently. And similarly, streams are not wetlands either. The water is moving down gradient. It's not temporarily detained, but along many streams and rivers, right adjacent to it, lateral to the bank, there are wetlands.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a really important distinction. I mean, it's subtle, but it's important.
But it shows the connectivity, too, of wetlands to other habitat types. While they have their own dynamics going on between the soils, the vegetation, and the water, there is that interaction with the adjacent habitat that is also very important.
Yeah, and we'll get into this later, but like people are digging a pond and they think it's a wetland, but it's not, because you've got, there aren't plants or soils that are what a wetland is.
Yeah. Again, it needs to have the vegetation to be a wetland. Now, there are some areas within wetlands where you might not have vegetation, but the entirety of the area that is wetland, it will mostly have vegetation. But if the water is too deep for vegetation to grow, then it's a pond. It's not or a lake, but it's not a wetland.
Why are wetlands valuable? What are their functions in our ecosystem? Just give us a synopsis, if you would.
Okay, how about if I just rattle off a little bit of a list of some of the functions or values that we have for wetlands?
We'd be happy to. You just rattle on to your heart's content.
I think when people think of wetlands, more than likely they're thinking of fish and wildlife habitat, and that's very true. They do function for a variety of species. You listed like mammals and fish and amphibians, invertebrates, they're all in wetlands. But so they do provide habitat, but they also provide slope stability. For example, you may notice sometimes that there will be a wetland, it'll be set back from a steep bluff a little ways, but it's temporarily detaining water. And if the water just continued, say, downhill, there could be erosion. So it's allowing water to infiltrate in a way that the slope can handle. It doesn't destabilize it. It actually stabilizes it by preventing excess water, say, during precipitation from eroding the bluff. So that's one. And so far we've been pretty much talking about freshwater wetlands, but along marine shorelines, you've got estuaries that do have that marine water coming in and out twice a day. Estuaries are quite often in low bank environments, and what they do is when the wave energy, like say during a storm, hits the vegetation, it helps disperse the energy and prevents further upland flooding. So in addition to providing habitat for certain species, it is also minimizing the potential impact of wave energy during high energy events, storm events. Okay. They're obviously, as far as people go, they're good for recreation. People love to go bird watching, ride bikes. You go out to the coast, for example, and there's the walkways over the wetlands. People just like to walk through wetlands, like to bird watch, and so they are recreational opportunities. And then they perform water quality functions. So they can take up nutrients and transform them so that you don't have eutrophication. They also, because they're detaining water, the water's velocity slows down when it gets to the wetland, and things like sediments or toxicants, other things can drop out of the water column. It prevents the toxicant, for example, from moving down gradient. It sits in the wetland.
Like into drinking water and
yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes. They maintain base flows in streams. So in a real world example of this could be along Chimicum Creek and the East Fork of Chimicum Creek. There's a lot of wetlands. It's in a valley. They're both in valleys. They have surface water runoff coming down. They have wetlands at the headwaters and along stream channels. And what the water is doing along those streams is it's temporarily detaining any kind of flood events from maybe winter runoff that over the banks, or it is taking excess precipitation and it is storing there. And it sits in the wetland, and then it slowly over the summer, as it gets drier, the water recharges the streams. And that's why, for example, anyone who's been to Illahee in to watch the salmon come up Chimicum Creek in September, you'll see that there is some water in there. It's pretty low water, but there is water enough for the salmon to get upstream. And we haven't had a lot of rain since then, so where's the water coming from? And in part, the wetlands all along the streams that are slowly being recharged. Ah. There's a lot of value to wetlands, protecting wetlands and the functions they provide.
Yeah. Yep.
So is the position of the wetland in the landscape important relative to its function?
Yes, it's something to be considered. So for example, where we are now at the Winona, this is a depressional wetland, and so that means water's coming in from all sides and it's temporarily being detained. So a wetland like this, in addition to providing habitat, it's also recharging groundwater and even aquifers, which then serve for potable water for people. So that's an example. And lake fringe wetlands, they, in addition to providing habitat, they can take up and temporarily detain the water so that if, say, a stream runs through the lake and it's a high flow event, the water has somewhere to go further than downstream flooding. So it's those wetlands around the lake help.
They serve like little natural reservoirs.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And, you know, the wetlands can occur along slopes. And, again, it helps to have the wetland held in the wetland that maybe is coming down as a finger through the slope rather than going faster, because the soils are holding the water there. So it's not eroding the slope. It's holding.
It's like a big sponge that's just retaining the excess on the fringes.
Right. And then wetlands, as I've just mentioned, along rivers and streams, they help moderate the flood flow that comes down during peak events and holds the water there for a while. So while most wetlands provide habitat, there are some functions that are related to its position in the landscape.
Uh-huh. The main thing that's so confusing to me about defining a wetland habitat is that the indicators can be so subtle. And I know that I'm not alone in being puzzled. We're always expecting there to be water in evidence, but the water can be seasonal and below the surface of the substrate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's only by noticing the plant species there or digging down and studying the soil type that we can tell if we're dealing with a wetland habitat sometimes.
Sometimes, yes. So in some instances, the vegetation there may indicate that there's a wetland, but it's not conclusive until you dig your soil pit. So for example, say a forested area with red alder and salmonberry understory, those can kind of occur in both locations. So if, as a wetland biologist, you're out walking and you come to an area that has vegetation like that, you have to stop and check the below ground parts, because that tells you whether the water has been at or near the soil surface for sufficient periods of time to be a wetland.
Because those particular plant species are tolerant of a lot of different conditions. And then we'll get into later that there are specific plant species where you see them and you go, oh, I don't even need to dig the soil. I know by seeing that plant species that we've got a wetland
right here.
The
classic one is you walk up to an area, there's cattails and there's standing water. It's pretty obvious. I mean, there's probably enough water there that you can't even get a good soil sample out. So you know that when you've got something that is almost always going to be in a wetland and you've got the water, you've got a wetland.
Uh-huh.
But you still, as a wetland biologist, you do have to document it. So,
to see what type of soil it is.
You have to record something. Yep. So you are recording. So what I'm saying is you don't just go out and make a subjective decision based as a wetland biologist. There's methods that you follow. And so even though it's very obvious, you probably don't even need to be a wetland biologist to see that it's a wetland, it is something that needs to be documented properly in order for it to be regulated as a wetland.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes sense. So what are the different types of wetlands? And you'd think that that would be an easy question, but I did a little bit of research online before our meeting, and the USGS, the U.S. Geological Service, and the Department of Ecology both had kind of a different list of what they considered different types of wetlands. So I just kind of laughed. I was like, no wonder lay people are a little perplexed, because wetlands are complex. It's hard to define what a certain type is.
Yes, so there's different terms, like there's different terms in the United States than, say, there are in Europe. So there's various ways of describing them. It could be a marsh. You could be describing it based on its vegetation as a marsh with herbaceous vegetation, or as a swamp with trees, or as a bog which has no other hydrologic inputs, you know, other than rain. There's no stream going through it. So those are ways of describing it, and it's quite often by the type of vegetation that exists there. But for regulatory purposes, you know, you've got more scientific terms, shall we say. So the equivalent of a wetland that is dominated by herbaceous vegetation, which might be considered a marsh, would be called a palustrine emergent vegetation wetland. So,
oh, that's funny. And palustrine means what? Freshwater or?
It's freshwater.
Okay.
Yes. And so estuaries, which is another type of wetland, would be estuarine. And rivers, which are not wetlands, rivers and streams, they're riverine, and lakes are lacustrine, but they may have, say, palustrine emergent wetland immediately adjacent to that lacustrine wetland. So it depends on why you want to describe it. So it could be different for regulatory purposes than it might be for just describing a wetland and what type of habitat it might be providing.
So what type of wetland would Winona be classified as?
This would be a palustrine forested wetland from where we're standing right now. There might be some other areas where that might be dominated by shrubs or emergent, meaning herbaceous vegetation, that would add another component to it. But where we're standing right now, palustrine forested. You see anything else, Meg, that you would say?
No, I think you're right on, Donna.
Okay.
Well, I think that we need to stop talking and get out there and see what's we can find in this cool area. We've been at the edges of the wetland in a little patch of sun. We have been doing this part of the recording, but we need to get out and stomp around. While we've been sitting here, did you hear those distant barred owls? I heard some barred owls go off.
No, I didn't.
And then there have been some black-capped chickadees. But we are going to be looking for birds and amphibians and continue to learn, and it's a great thing. But I want to be sure, before we completely run out of time, that we play the mystery sound again and tell you a little bit about it. So what you've heard is the sound of a violet-green swallow. And they are one of the first breeding season migrants to arrive, and a sure sign that spring is here. Donna heard their calls yesterday when she was walking in this area, though they are not wetland-dependent. They use a variety of different habitat types. And the recording is from the wonderful Cornell Lab of Ornithology, which brings us the marvelous website allaboutbirds.org and the amazing Merlin Bird app for your phones. They describe the songs and calls thus. This is, quote, "Although the violet-green swallow is a member of the songbird group, its song is a simple series of chirps and is only heard during the pre-dawn hours. Their calls are the most frequently heard sounds. In flight, they give a short chee chee, which they often string together for several seconds as they interact with other swallows. They twitter during courtship and territory establishment, or in combination with other calls. When defending the nest site, they sometimes give a sharp zwark," unquote. Violet-green swallows are often seen in groups circling with other swallows in search of insects, and can be easily confused with tree swallows. Both species have the gorgeous iridescent purpley blue-green backs and white fronts, but look for the white flank patches and white extending above the eye on the violet-green. Thank you so much for joining us, Donna, and sharing your wetland expertise with us. And we'd also like to thank our friend Meg Amos for not only being our field recorder, but for being our additional wetland expert today.
Thank you, Debron. It's nice been fun.
Oh, it's been really fun. Yeah. So we're going to have a part two. Next month, you're going to find us tromping about the wetland and getting into digging soil pits. And meanwhile, if you'd like to see a good example of a wetland area with its hydrology still present, Donna suggests that you head out for a walk to Gibbs Lake sometime soon. In our thank yous, we'd also like to include Nora Petrich for being our sound editor, along with all of you for listening. Remember that you can now listen to Nature Now as a podcast. Just go to your favorite podcast app and search for Nature Now KPTZ. And we are also on Instagram with the same tag. Wishing you, as always, happy trails.